Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 19 to chapter 3, verse 32. Handling debilitating mockery by separating from faithless mockers unto a faithful God. A difficult challenge for a believer can face to fulfilling God's assignment is to face belittling criticism in his efforts for God that tempts him and others around him to be intimidated into ceasing to do God's work. I don't know if you've ever faced this, but it's really something. You get up and you do your best in a teaching situation, or you try your best to serve the Lord in some capacity, and someone comes along and mocks the effort. It takes the wind right out of your sails. It's like getting a fist hit in your stomach. Knocks the wind out of you. Well, Nehemiah faced this trial in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 19, and his upright response led to tremendous blessing as follows. Let me just read that. Chapter 2, verse 19. When Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the servant and the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, namely heard that they were going to rise up and build the wall, they laughed at us to scorn, or they mocked us, and despised us and said, "What is this thing that you're going to do? Will you rebel against the king?" Then I answered them and said unto them, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion or right or memorial in Jerusalem." And then let me start reading chapter 3, verse 1. Remember, there are no chapter breaks in the original. Then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brother and the priests, and they built the sheep gate. They sanctified it and set up the doors of it. Even under the tower of Mia, they sanctified it under the tower of Hananiel. It's about 175-yard distance there on the north side. And then the rest of the chapter deals with other people lining up, and they all lined up all around the wall area. They all took a section of wall and started building it. Very wisely, they started building from the ground up all at once. Because then it wasn't like there was a wall here in the space where the enemies could come in. They started building all at once so that if they had horses come, they had to hop over. And then eventually the horses couldn't get over. But they did this, and so they built up the wall as fast as they could all around. And it made it difficult. But anyway, Nehemiah faced debilitating mockery when his plan to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem became public. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah, the rulers of Samaria and Ammon that we've dealt with last time, along with Geshem the Arabian, I think that's what this fellow's name is, Geshem or Gershem? Geshem, that's right. Geshem the Arabian, who was a powerful chieftain of Dedan in northwest Arabia, foes of Israel surrounding them, heard of Nehemiah's decision to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. They responded with debilitating mockery. They not only despised the plan, but they tried to intimidate Nehemiah and his followers by suggesting that they planned to rebel against the Persian king in rebuilding Jerusalem. You notice that in the verse 19. What is this thing that you do? Are you going to rebel against the king? Now, that's a very important challenge, because earlier than this, Ezra, who's also a contemporary of Nehemiah, had been stopped from rebuilding the temple because these same guys were involved sending a message to the king and persuading this very king to stop them rebuilding the temple. So this is a threat. You do that, we're going to send a message back to the king, and he's going to stop you from rebuilding the wall. I mean, we've done this before, and we can pull it. That's our little trump card. We'll pull it out again if we have to. So it's a threat. Well, in reply, Nehemiah did three things. He stated his faith in God based on his past help. That's God's past help. He asserted God would give success as he avoided exposure to the debilitating mockery by separating from the mockers. First of all, Nehemiah, you'll recall, had seen God use the Persian king to grant him authority to go to Jerusalem and to build its wall and collect timber from the king's forests for the construction of the city gates. Back in Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 4 through 8, you'll notice when Nehemiah was with the king had said, verse 4 of chapter 2, "What do you want to make request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said unto the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you would send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it." And the king said unto me, the queen also sitting beside him, and remember the queen was a bit of a problem with the rest of the harem. They made life difficult for the king. And so Nehemiah knew that she might try to undo his efforts, so he wanted letters from the king that would bypass her authority. "For how long shall your journey be, and what will you and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set up a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, if it please the king, let letters be given unto me to the governors on the other side of the Trans-Euphrates area, that would be Ammon and so forth, that they may convey me over until I come to Judah. So these letters would be given to Sanballat and Geshem and so forth, so that they wouldn't bother him as he made the trip. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the palace, which appertains to the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the temple that I shall enter into it. And the king granted me according to the good hand of my God upon me. So Nehemiah knew that God had helped him. And based upon that fact, he answered Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, affirming that the God of heaven would prosper him in the wall-building effort regardless of their human weaknesses or their taunts. This is one thing we can do. If we're facing mockery, or someone is trying to belittle us in an effort that we're making for God, if we remember that God has supported us in this very realm before, it's God versus them. And when that happens, when God's versus anybody, God wins. Because, you know, one with God is a majority. So God says, you know, God's going to help me. The reason I know he's going to help me is he's already helped me in this very area. I've got the letters for the timber. I've got the permission from the king. And we're going to go ahead. So, see to it. Then consequently, Nehemiah was intent on arising and building, stating as much to his foes. That's why he said in verse 20b, the Lord, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and we'll build. We're going to go ahead. No matter what you guys say, no matter what you think, this is the will of God. He's called us to do this. He's already given us permission through the king. We're going. So, look out. However, to deal with their exposure to the taunting, Nehemiah stated his clear separation from his taunters. Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem had no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it. This is the New International Version, the last part of verse 20. This reveals that Nehemiah realized these taunters were privately concerned about losing influence over the region where Jerusalem was to be rebuilt. And Nehemiah clarified that they were about to lose any claims that they had to its rule. And that was a very bold, courageous, but necessary stand to offset the mockery. See, he could read. Being the king's cupbearer, he knew personalities. He knew people well. He knew these guys were mocking because secretly they were concerned about the Jews setting up shop. He knew it. He could read through it. So he said, you know what? We're setting up shop. That was the very thing that terrified him. And so he said, we're going to stick it to you. This is the land that God has given us. We're going. And you have no part in it. So you guys just clear out. You've got your own territories. This is ours. Look out. Of course, this is drawing a line in the sand, but sometimes you have to do that. You just have to draw a line in the sand and just refuse to be bullied. They had no right to stop him. Now, Nehemiah's stand inspired a mixed but a chiefly affirmative response from the men of Israel. And fanning out over the entire wall area, they began to rebuild the wall of Jerusalem. First of all, Eliashib, Israel's high priest, the main leader of the returned exiles, responded to Nehemiah's rebuttal of the Gentile foes by arising with the other priests to begin rebuilding and sanctifying the sheep gate with its doors, building the wall from there to the Tower of Hananel. I checked my Macmillan Bible Atlas, and this is the very northern wall of Jerusalem, and it's about 175 yards long. So the priest said, we're going to start right here. And, of course, that's north of the temple. And they started building from one gate over to that tower area, and they rebuilt 175 yards, and they started building it. I suppose it would be frontage basically from, I don't know, maybe from the Napier Brothers' house that used to be down here, maybe up to the second house over here. I don't know, 175 yards. But it was an area, and they just picked it. This is our part. We're going to build it. And they did. And these are priests. These are guys who weren't usually out there doing heavy labor like that. They were men of God. They were like a whole bunch of pastors. They got together, a whole bunch of Tom Buckleys, rolled up their sleeves and went to work. And that was exciting. Now the rest of the chapter, verses 2 to 32, details how other groups of men took up the task of rebuilding other parts of the wall until the whole city wall was being addressed all at once. Now not everybody in Israel was positively motivated by Nehemiah's speech. The men from Tekoa, this is Amos' hometown, it's a town just south of Jerusalem, It refused to work, these men did, possibly being afraid of reprisals from Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. Notice verse 5. And next unto them the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. Dr. Ryrie in his footnote says the nobles of Tekoa refused to work, perhaps fearing reprisals from Sanballat. That put not their necks is a phrase that means did not support. So this is interesting. They were afraid. Nehemiah's drawn a line in the sand, so you've got people choosing sides between Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, and Nehemiah. Fortunately, most of the Jews are siding with Nehemiah, but these other guys, the Jews from Tekoa, were afraid to. On the other hand, a wonderful contrast to this failure was the decision by Malchijah, the son of Haram, to help build the Tower of the Furnaces. If you skip down to verse 11, you notice it says, Malchijah, the son of Haram, and Hashub, the son of Pahathmoab, repaired the other piece and the Tower of the Furnaces. The Tower of the Furnaces is on the west side of the city of Jerusalem. It's down about halfway. And that was a big tower that went up. Now, who's Malchijah? If I skip back to Ezra chapter 10, verse 31, I find out he was a man who had fallen into sin and had to be corrected. Ezra chapter 10, verse 31. And I'm going to start at beginning at verse 18. And among the sons of the priests were found they that had taken foreign wives, namely the sons of Jeshua, the son of Josadak, and his brothers Maaseiah, Eleazar, Jarib, and Gedaliah. And they gave their hands that they would put away their Gentile wives, and being guilty, they offered a ram for the flock of the trespass. And then it lists the others who were involved. Well, if you go all the way down to verse 31, you'll see, and of the sons of Harim, Eleazar, Ishijah, and Malchijah. Okay, this is the same one. He was one who had married one of these Gentile wives. And they were supposed to break that contact because they were actually going to be corrupting the Jewish line, and that's in violation of the law. So he was found to be guilty, and so he put away his wife. Now, what did he do? Get bitter over this? No. Verse 11 of chapter 3 in Nehemiah, Malchijah, the son of Haram, repaired the piece in the Tower of the Furnaces. He was corrected. He'd been through this, you want to call it a church discipline, all right? But he's come back, he's repented, and now he's rolling up his sleeves. He's daring to stand against Tobiah and Geshem and Sanballat, and he's siding with Nehemiah, and he's helping to rebuild the wall. This would have been a tremendous encouragement. Here's this guy who had to be corrected publicly, but he's out there, he's rolling up his sleeves and helping with everybody else. So he had sinned in having married a pagan wife, but he had since put an end to that unbiblical union in line with the provisions of the law, and was now committed to serving the Lord in faith. Incidentally, this doesn't mean that there's room for a Christian to divorce. We don't believe that. There were three cases where Jews had to put away a situation. If you were in an engagement before the wedding and your fiancé was found to be immoral and everything, you had to break the engagement. But in order to get the engagement broken, you had to have a bill of divorce. It's different than our culture today. Or if you married someone who was your first cousin, that was against the law. That had to be annulled, but you had to get a bill of divorce for that. The other case is if a Jew married a Gentile under the law, that had to be broken off. None of those cases apply to us because we're not under the law. So divorce is not condoned today. This is a special situation. So the lesson is, in facing debilitating mockery to achieving God's will, Nehemiah relied on God's signals of his past help to assert that God would give him success, while he also separated from the mockers to distance himself from their debilitating words. The result, though mixed, was productive for God. May we handle debilitating mockery to doing God's will by relying on his record of past help to affirm that he will make us succeed, and part from the mockers to protect our motivation. This is amazing. I was talking with a believer today after the worship service. It was this afternoon at the worship service in Fellowship Hall. And this believer was sharing with me how the Lord had led her to make a stand against a relative who was a professing Christian, because this relative is persisting in living in a life of sin to the point where this believer, even though she dearly loves this fellow Christian who's a relative, even though, and she shared this, I still do love this person, but I can't have my life and the life of my family interacting with this person because of what this person is doing. So I've broken off ties as far as that, you know, they can't come to the house and that kind of a thing. And taken a tremendous stand of holiness. And in this situation, Nehemiah had to break with those who were mocking, because the mockers, if they allowed themselves to continually be exposed to that, it was just going to wear them down and wear down their motivation. So he said, look, you know, you guys, you go over there. You're not part of us. And he parted company with them so as to protect the motivation of the people there so they get about with the work of God. And sometimes that's the only thing you can do. Just pull back away from a mocker like that and to go forward for the Lord. So may God help us to have the courage today to stand up to mocking that is not right. Now, I've never, in fact, God never gives us the right as Christians to mock anybody. That's an evil. And we're not supposed to be doing that, but we need to separate. This happens to go along, incidentally, very beautifully with a passage in the Old Testament in Psalm 1. And it talks about the difference between those who are mockers and those who are truly godly. The Psalm 1, verse 1 says, "Blessed is the man that does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of the scornful," or the seat of those who mock. "But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law does he meditate day and night. He shall be like a tree that has been transplanted onto an irrigated garden, that brings forth his fruit in his own season. His foliage also shall not wither, and whatsoever he does shall prosper. The ungodly," those who are included in the mocking, "are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind drives here and there. Therefore the ungodly," or the mockers, "shall not stand in the day of the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord acknowledges the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly," or the mockers, "shall perish." So there's a tremendous difference between those who are mocking and those who aren't. And God wants us to have the courage to say, no, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to part company with that. I don't want to give my ears to that. I don't want it to affect my motivation. I'm going to rejoice and go ahead and do what God wants me to do. And just do it. And when we do that, God will really bless us.